Hey, Toby, let's start with a couple things that I think are real important for everybody. And you and I were just talking about this, doing some extensive planning preparation for our call here. But let's hit two topics that you and I were just discussing. One is, and I'm sad to say I'm old enough to have a long-term perspective in relative terms about the martial arts industry in the United States, because we were just, you and I and Jeff Smith were just talking, and he and I go back to the 60s in the martial arts industry. And I can tell you a couple things. One is, over the years, and this has been of great benefit to me from time to time, is over the years a great deal of the interest or lack of interest in martial arts instruction for different age groups was because of movies, TV, and other media interest. And after I started, so it wasn't the reason I got in, but it was a time when the Junry Institute, which I was a part of at the time, was really the heyday of the Junry Institute growing from several locations to 9 and then 12 in the D.C. metro area. Was one of the first demographic upticks in the martial arts was Bruce Lee, Into the Dragon, unfortunately released slightly after he died in the U.S., and then the Kung Fu TV series, which of course was originally supposed to star Bruce Lee, and they decided that a Chinese guy shouldn't star as the star of a Chinese show, and they cast David Carradine. But Into the Dragon and then the Kung Fu TV series was greatly responsible for the boom in the martial arts in the 70s. And I had the luck and fortunately the awareness that I opened my schools, Mile High Karate, in Denver in the early 80s. I moved to Colorado in 1983, opened the first school in August 1983, opened five schools in 18 months from there. But happened to be in the midst of that kind of crazy expansion just as Karate Kid 1 hit, and ended up in the exact same type of promotional opportunity that we've made available for all the members with Kingdom Panda and Red Belt in the middle of Karate Kid. And I'm in one of our schools now. It's a 2,500 square foot school that at the time had 500 and I think peaked at 575 active students in a 2,500 square feet school. So to say it was, kind of busy at the time was putting an understatement. That same time Steeple Valley and I were friends, and I remember a year or two later visiting a school that he had that was 1,600 square feet, I believe, that was also maxed out about 550 students. So the shift, the opportunity was Enter the Dragon, Karate Kid, then we had Ninja Turtles, and then there was Power Rangers, which never quite had the same kind of impact. But part of what I'm getting at here is we have this confluence of events where a couple days ago I picked up Forbes magazine, which I have a subscription to. The cover of Forbes magazine are the two co-owners, and of course there's three owners, but two brothers. What are their names, Toby? You're familiar with the gaming thing.
Yeah, I can't remember, but the Golden Nugget is the hotel that they just took over about 4 years ago.
Yeah, but it's two gentlemen from the gaming industry that – between them, two brothers that own 90%. But they're on the cover of Forbes magazine. And the cover story is about how UFC is now worth $1 billion. And, of course, they bought it for $2 million. And so we have this confluence of events where, again, I've never seen, even in Karate Kid days, even in the Dragon's days, I've never seen a situation where every segment of our market is getting huge exposure. I mean, you flip through the channels, and there's the PBS series, and there's the, MMA shows, and there's a whole bunch of different martial arts shows. In fact, there's a new one coming out on ESPN. There's, in the movies, Never Back Down, which was a pretty decent movie. Didn't do very well at the box office, but Forbidden Kingdom debuted at number one. Red Belt comes out this weekend. It's already playing in L.A. and New York. And then Kung Fu Panda, my 6.5-year-old daughter, I can't watch a show that she's watching without seeing three Kung Fu Panda promotions. So we have the preschool market, the little ninjas market. We have the young kids. We have the preteens, we have the teenagers, and we have the adults. So regardless of what you're teaching, whether it's like Eric Sabarge, who's a Tai Chi stylist and soft stylist, or whether it's like John Hackam and Chuck Liddell in the pit, or whether it's like Mile High Karate, you know, Sylvan Learning Centers with martial arts, focusing on character development for kids and for families, whatever segment you've decided to target, there's never been an event like this where things are booming. And, you know, the interesting flip side is I'd have to say that there's never been a period of time in the martial arts industry where more schools were going belly up. So, you know, the irony is here's this booming market with huge opportunity. At the same time, there's a whole bunch of schools biting the dust. And, you know, I have some analysis of why that is, but I will tell you, the other thing I see is there's never been a time in history where there are more schools grossing, big schools grossing $1 million a year or more. I mean, it used to be I knew one or two of them. Now there's a bunch of them. And there's also a lot of schools that are maybe like this one, 2,500 square feet, doing $500,000 a year or netting 100,000, 150,000, 200,000. So it's a boom time in the industry where a lot of people are biting the dust at the same time. Toby, why don't you add to that? We were talking about the people's perception and the reality of the economy right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just to maybe reiterate something that you just said, you know, we had a conversation. Rob and I were in L.A. 10 weeks ago, maybe, something like that, 3 months ago. And we were having lunch with Don Warner, who runs that video company, Rising Sun Video Productions. He had an interesting question that you know, neither of us really took a lot of time to think about. But Don said, well, you know, and Don has been in and out of the martial arts industry, not necessarily in the school industry, but in and around the martial arts industry for, you know, 30 years, 35 years. And he said, well, you know, how many million-dollar-a-year schools do you think there are? And I had a gut reaction, and I wrote a quick number down on a napkin. And then Rob really started to actually think about it, which was what I should have done. But Rob said, well, you know, I know this guy and this guy and this guy, and I know these three guys, and I know these four guys in Chicago, and I know these three or four guys in L.A. And he came up with a list just off the top of his head of about 40 school owners who he personally knows, who he has a personal relationship with, who are million-dollar-a-year school owners. And then I started to look through the database, and I started to say, well, you know, let's take a little bit more of an analytical approach on this. And I came up with a list of about 75 school owners who, in one way, shape, or form, or another, have million-dollar-a-year single-location schools. And, of course, we're talking about gross revenue, so that's a whole other animal. But that was a number that Don never conceptualized. He never would have conceptualized that. He said, you know, the last time I looked at any numbers was probably 10 years ago, and the number was 10. You know, 10 years ago, there were 10 guys in the industry, maybe 15 people in the industry, who figured out how to do seven figures in a location. And now it's, you know, 7 to 10 times that number. So, I mean, definitely there's – It's that the industry is coming of age as far as that goes. And then to answer your second question was, you know, unfortunately we're all victims of what we let enter our mind, right, and let enter our thinking. And if you watch the news every day, it's been about how bad the economy is and how bad, you know, businesses are doing and businesses are failing at an astronomical rate and all these other problems. But when you really analyze the numbers, you know, when you really look at what it takes – what the economic indicators are. I mean, you did some research on this. You do research on this all the time, but the two things that I looked at, just sort of anecdotally, was number one, the Dow Jones is 13,000 points. I mean, I remember, and I'm, you know, a bit younger, but I remember when the Dow Jones hit 10,000. Everybody thought that it was the best day that ever happened. I mean, when the Dow was at 10,000 points, it was an amazing feat that would never be overshadowed by any other feat. And here we are today at 13. You know, I mean, today it's down about 80 points, but it's 12,900, you know, 12,900 points. I mean, nobody ever thought that would happen. And then also you take a look at jobs numbers. You take a look at the real unemployment numbers and the real indicators of what are happening in the economy from a statistical standpoint. And I got to tell you, I don't know what the news, the people on the news are watching, because it's not fact. It's
you know,
What sells
I've
newspapers?
got the real numbers here because I, as you said, I had researched it for something that's going in the member packet next month, and here's the number: unemployment rate, my educational background was first in economics and then a master's in business, and around 5% is what economists call transitional unemployment. And those are people who have quit a job or gotten fired who are in the process of looking for another job. And if you start to get much below that number, you have a problem with growth because now there are more jobs than there are people chasing them, and you have an inflationary pressure on wages and so forth, which is a bad thing. So here's the number. At the end of the Ford administration, unemployment was 5.5%. At the end of the Carter administration, 7.2%. At the end of the Reagan administration, it was 5.3%. At the end of the first Bush administration, 7.4%. At the end of the Clinton administration, it was 3.9%. At the current place, it just ticked up from a little under 4 to 5.1. Now, the other thing you look at is inflation. And end of the Ford administration is 5.75%. End of the Carter administration was 13.58%. At the end of the Reagan administration is 4.8%. At the end of the Bush administration is 3.03. End of the Clinton administration is 3.38. At current rate is 2.85. So inflation is at, by those numbers, an historic low. Unemployment is not historic low, but it's pretty close. I mean, it's right about where, if it's any lower, and I remember, 8 years ago, around here, you couldn't go to a movie theater and also get a Coke because none of the theaters could hire kids to stand behind the counter at a rate that they could afford. So all the economic gloom and doom really is kind of nuts because, the numbers don't bear that out. Gas prices have hiked up, but, they're high, but adjusted for inflation, they're not that much higher than they peaked before.
Yeah, and the other anecdotal statistic that I stumbled across maybe a few months ago was last year, the two fastest growing car sales segments was the Hummer H3 and the Prius. So, which of course are not, neither of which are inexpensive cars, but certainly don't bear any resemblance to the market is freaking out, not willing to spend money on vehicles. BMW also posted record gains last year. And, just in Orlando, the BMW dealership, and of course this is just anecdotal, but the BMW dealership in Orlando went from I can't remember how big it was, but it was a regular-looking car lot that had just one story, to building an eight-story parking garage to park all the new cars in it that they were going to sell, So, I mean, it's just they've done an amazing expansion over there. So, regardless.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just regardless of what the media uses to sell newspapers and to get you to watch the evening news, facts are facts. And unless you're, in a demographic that skews highly towards the home construction industry or, that's the sector that took the big hit.
Mm-hmm.
The credit crunch really hurt new home construction and new home sales. So if you're in a demographic and the banks that finance those loans, that's exactly right. Yeah. So if you're in a sector that was a huge growth sector in that when that housing boom happened, you're probably feeling a little pinch, but really that's the exception to the rule, not the rule.
Yeah. Well, and to make it even more timely, today's Wall Street Journal, Wednesday, May 7th, 2008, the cover of Section B, the marketplace section above the fold, is Disney parks hit all-time records. The net income for Disney rose 22% relative to a year ago. It says that the theme park unit is up 11% compared to a year ago. It says that bookings for the rest of the year are up 7% compared to a year ago. And it says that in Disney parks, the average daily spending per room is, what was the percentage? It's up fairly dramatically. I think it was up 25%. So So the, you know, and again, in many of the cases, not everybody, but in many of the cases, the people who are on the call who are focusing on, you know, on suburban families, kids, whether they be preschool or elementary age, and families, that's our demographic. You know, they're going and dropping a grand a day at in Orlando, down where you're at, Toby, or in L.A., and you know, this multi-billion-dollar industry is way up, even though everybody's you know, supposedly crying the blues. So, you know, I think that's enough on that. We beat that topic to death, but we have two things here that people have to be aware of. You know, we now have what I would have to describe as this gushing river of opportunity flowing past us, and that means PBS and HBO and pay-per-view and cover of Forbes and cover of a bunch of other magazines, and Never Back Down, Forbidden Kingdom, Red Belt, Kung Fu Panda, and more to come. But we have this gushing torrent of media. I mean, and again, Forbidden Kingdom, for goodness sake, is like a $70 million production. I don't know what Kung Fu Panda is, but they're probably dropping $70 million on advertising on TV to promote the thing. So we've got this, what I would guesstimate is going to be just in the movie side, is going to be $300 or $400 million business that's promoting us, all happening within about a 4 month period of time. And you can like or dislike UFC and all the mixed martial arts stuff for the Mile High Karate schools. I dislike it. I think it's counterproductive for us. However, if I'm running a mixed martial arts school or a Brazilian jiu-jitsu school, or am anchored tightly into the adult market and that side, it's you know, greatest boom in history. So the thing about, though, a rushing river of opportunity is you still got to stick your bucket in the river and bail it out. And I hear these songs of woe from schools who are like going in every day, unlocking the door, sitting there. Hell, you know, Toby, we know most of them, you know, never answer their phone, and you know, don't watch their ratios, don't know what their numbers are, and they have this tale of woe, and they go belly up, and they're singing the blues about how bad the martial arts industry right now. Well, it's in turmoil, because I think that something is happening here, which is you either got to be fish or fowl. And if you try to be all things to all people, I don't think you're going to do well. Again, I've had conversations with Toby. You were there when Lloyd Irving and I were talking, but I've had conversations with multiple people who are mixed martial arts schools or Brazilian jiu-jitsu schools. Somebody showed me the UFC All-Star Report a couple days ago, and one of the Gracie schools is $120,000 a month in billings. Lloyd's school in Maryland, and three others that he was working with, one of the guys we met from Tennessee, and there's another one in Miami, are all million-dollar a year operations that are, you know, mixed martial arts schools. Now, the ones that Lloyd was working with are all following, you know, the Mile High Karate price model, which is $197 for a new enrollment, $359 or $397 for an upgrade, and then a $997 elite or coaching level. So they're following that exact same pricing model. Their business model is the same: lead generate, get intros, tight conversion rate to intro, tight focus on the early days for an upgrade, tight focus on retention, and a pricing structure that makes sense. So whether you're character development for kids, or whether you're targeting the adult market and in mixed martial arts or something, there's huge opportunity. Now, where I think the mistake is trying to be all things to all people. I mean, you know, and again, we've got this relationship. We're working with John Hackman and Chuck Liddell. But last thing we'd be doing is doing you know, UFC seminars in Mile High Karate schools, because that's, you know, counterproductive to what it is I perceive that we are. So we don't want to confuse the market. So if you're going to be a mixed martial arts school, you're going to be a mixed martial arts school. If you're going to be, you know, a kid in family school, you're going to be a kid in family school. Toby, what would you add to that?
I think that's exactly right, and I guess the thing that, if I'm a school owner and I'm in, you know, pick a town, Paducah, right? The thing that I think you have to be extremely careful, I think there's two things that you have to never, ever, ever let seep into your psyche. Number one is your school, and we've seen this at NAMA now. Of course, they've seen it for years and years and years and years, and now since we've been there, I've seen it every day, is I'll see a school in one area, one demographic, that is failing. And exactly the same area, exactly the same demographic, almost identical locations, a school that's succeeding. So the one thing you can never, ever, ever let seep into your psyche is that external economic forces or external forces are going to are going to predict what your business is going to be able to do. Because overwhelmingly, it's about what you do, not about what anything else is doing, not about what the economy is doing, not about what the market is doing. It's about what you do in your school. So the number one thing, I think, is we have all this opportunity. We have to go find some of it. And the second thing is you can never, ever, ever let yourself say to yourself, well, I understand all that, but it doesn't work in my school, or that doesn't work in my demographic, or that doesn't work in my location, or that doesn't work with my students. And it's very easy to let yourself walk down that path, because human beings, we're always trying to find reasons for things, right? We're always trying to find reasons for why things aren't working the way we want them to, and it's very easy to externalize that. But,
here's my quote, Tubby. Winners remember results, losers remember reasons.
Exactly. And I can tell you, I mean, just anecdotally, in 8 seconds, I did a seminar in I can't remember what state I was in at the time, and I had a person in the audience who was running a Muay Thai school. And look, the way to run a martial arts school the most successfully doesn't have anything to do with your style. It doesn't have anything to do with your location, and it has very, very little to do with the type of student that you're trying to attract. This is a great example. The highest grossing online game of ever has been this thing called World of Warcraft. And I'm a little bit of a computer geek, so I know a bit about it. But the reason that game is so successful is because every time you log into the game, you have a mission to accomplish. After you accomplish that mission, you get a little bonus, you get stronger, your character gets more stuff, and you get to go do new stuff, right? It's almost the same kind of stuff, but you get to go do something different, something new that you've maybe not accomplished before. Well, that's the same way a successful martial arts school operates, right? And this person in the seminar who ran the Muay Thai school said, well, I can't have a belt system. We don't wear belts. I can't use a rank system. I can't exam my students for higher levels. I can't do any of these things. Well, obviously, that's just a short-sighted approach to operating that type of a location. My comment was, well, let me ask you a question. You know, do your students wear trunks? Yes, they wear trunks. Okay, great. Well, do you think you could, you know, adjust the structure of your program that so at a certain level of accomplishment, they could get a different color of trunks? Or maybe instead of a belt, they have a stripe on their pants, or, you know, whatever it may be. So the one thing you can never, ever, ever do is, number one, let external market forces determine the success or failure of your business. Number two, think that your business is different. Think that your school is different than the guy across the country who's doing really, really well. You're not any different. Your students aren't any different. What we're talking about is human nature. We're not talking about the difference of the people in Orlando from the people in Denver or the people in New Hampshire compared to the people in California. People are people. So, and the reasons martial arts schools are successful have to do with how they're operated, not external market forces. So I think that's the big lesson of the first half of today is, number one, your school isn't any different than Lloyd Irvin's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu school. It's not any different than my Taekwondo school. It's not any different than, you know, Steve LaValle's American Karate school. It's just not different.
You know, and there's something that frankly cracks me up, and you know, I don't want to offend anybody on the call, although if I don't offend two or three people a day, I feel like I'm not doing my job. But, you know, when we've been watching these surveys, anybody who hasn't filled that out, you know, we really appreciate it because we're tuning and tweaking the materials. In fact, you got the new Maximum Impact package this month that had about half of the modifications we're going to make it more usable based upon people's suggestions. But the thing that I see is a couple of things. One is, and I said it in the Smile High Maverick, one is the guys who are struggling the most their complaint is, I got this ad from NAPNA, and I'm a WTF school, and they don't have a V-neck uniform in the picture. They have like a regular, you know, traditional karate uniform in the picture. Stuff like that. You know, I'm reminded of for years, and of course Tom Callis and I have been friends for, I don't know, 20-some years. And for years, he had this ad that was working great for him, and it was a couple of Mile High Karate Kids in the picture. And I had an ad that was running great for me, and it was a picture of a couple of Tom Callis' kids in the picture. And Keith Hafner is still running an ad with a 9-year-old that is probably now 28 years old now, who was one of our students, and it was an ad that I did. And the you know, the kids in the ad that I ran that had the pictures from Tom Callis' kids had a West Coast Taekwondo uniform on. What difference did it make? I caught some flack because you remember Greg Moody and I were working together, and we ran an ad that we jointly printed, and one of the pictures was, you know, a bunch of ATA people uniforms on, and, you know, ATA people are saying, well, my Christ, not ATA, they can't be wearing those uniforms. Well, see, the market doesn't know the difference on that stuff. Now, if you run an adult-oriented mixed martial arts ad with a bunch of 12-year-olds in traditional karate uniforms, that's not going to work. But it's being focused on all the wrong stuff. And again, the best example is, I was going through, you and I were talking, Toby, we looked at about 100 of these, and there was a direct correlation among two things. One is, the more marketing activities a school was doing, the higher their reported active count. So the more things they checked, the more their active count. And all the schools who were like under 100 usually checked like one or two things, and all the schools that were like 300 or up checked like everything and added some stuff. The other thing that was a correlation is, the smaller and less financially successful the school was, the more they were interested in like karate, martial arts, technical stuff. The more they wanted more, you know, technical drills and stuff like that. And the more financially successful they were, the more interested they were in marketing, sales process, business operations, staff development, the more they were really focused on now moving their business to a next level as opposed to improving their own technical proficiency.
Yeah. You know, one of the takeaways on that, by the way, I thought was the guys, and this is overgeneralization, but I think it makes sense, the people on the surveys who requested more of the technical information, I think that they have a perception that there's a direct correlation between the physical technique that they're teaching in the classroom and their financial success, when there's very little. There is a relationship there. You can't teach, you know, a new beginner white belt things that aren't palatable to the new beginner white belt, right? I mean, there are some concessions you have to make. There are some deliberate plans you have to make in your curriculum structure. But frankly, if we take a cross segment of the market, you mentioned earlier, Eric Savard just teaching kung fu. You know, Julio Lanta teaches Hungar kung fu in Miami. You know, I mean, if we took a cross section, we'd find the style is irrelevant. What's relevant is, number one, lead generation activities versus conversion ratio. Number two, the structure of the curriculum of your program, not necessarily stylistically, but how it's presented to the student. And then number three is, what kind of upgrade process you're using. How early and how often are you garnering student commitment on a long-term basis?
Let me say what you just said differently so that maybe a few who missed the point get it. Is the market, literally what the market is draw a 3-mile radius around your school and go drive around the houses and look at the people who are living there. The market, the people out there in the vicinity of your school, don't know and don't care about what you're teaching. Okay, what is important is the group of people, the demographic and psychographic profile of who it is you're targeting. So are you targeting adults who want self-defense, fitness, and want to feel like they're Chuck Liddell, but they don't actually have to get hit? Is that what you're targeting, or are you targeting the families for kids who want confidence and better grades, or are you targeting the people my age, the 45 to 60-year-old crowd, who, you know, want to be doing something, but they don't want to be doing high impact, and maybe they're looking at something that's soft style or Tai Chi. Now, they don't know that's what they're looking for, but is that what you're targeting? So you have to define who the person is out there in the market who's a good fit for you. And then you've got to make sure that everything is intentionally congruent through the process. So your marketing approach, what the stuff looks like when you put it out there, how you deal with them when they come to you, how the school looks when you interact with them, how the staff looks when you interact with them. If you're, you know, if you're in character development for kids, then your head instructor has 28 tattoos, 3 earrings, and a ponytail. You know, you just became intentionally or otherwise incongruent with your target market. If you're targeting the adult MMA crowd and they come in and the head instructor is chunky, you immediately became incongruent. If you're targeting the 27-year-olds who want to learn that stuff and you have a 17-year-old on the floor, you created a problem for yourself. So it's got to be figure out who you're looking for and have everything from marketing message, sales process, look and feel the school, look and feel the staff, vocabulary and presentation of the staff, curriculum, all be congruent with what you're looking for. So it's got to be intentionally congruent all the way through the process. That's really what it boils down to. I'm sorry, I interrupted you, but I wanted to, you know, kind of hit that point because so many people still think that they're teaching Shotokan. And that may be the stylistic root of what's going on in the class, but it's not what the market cares about. The market cares about, is this something that's good for a 48-year-old to be, you know, a good conditioning activity, but not, you know, non-stress? Or is this something that's good for a 27-year-old to really achieve their objectives and mission? Or is this something good for a 12-year-old to achieve what they are? And you can't be out there, you know, advertising 12 styles, because the market doesn't care. Like Toby, I was talking about the conversation that Master Bill Clark and I had a couple days ago. You know, he and I are in perfect alignment. We're out there basically presenting, this is like Sylvan Learning Centers for kids with a physical component that's more fun, and going after the market for kids who need to do better in school, and going after the market for parents who want more confidence from the child, not trying to sell karate, because, you know, people don't care whether it's, you know, karate or taekwondo or Shotokan or kung fu. The market cares about what their own interests and benefits are.
Yeah,
so
I mean that's exactly the same thing. And you said intentional congruence, which is important. A lot of times those school owners would find themselves in the pattern of replicating what they were exposed to as a student, which doesn't necessarily equal what the market wants. It was what was attractive to them as a student, doesn't necessarily become that attractive to what the market wants. So I think that's exactly the same. That's exactly what I was saying, is it doesn't have much to do with the style. It doesn't have much to do with your curriculum. It doesn't have much to do with, you know, whether you teach front kick, side kick or not. I mean, it doesn't really have anything to do with any of that. What it has to do with is, you know, how directly you're facilitating what your market is looking for. So I think that's exactly right. And, you know, that probably, as long as as a school owner, I'm not letting those two things seep into my head. You know, I'm not letting, number one, external market conditions or external market forces determine whether I'm going to be successful or not. And number two, I'm not going to, you know, think that my business is different or my school is different because I teach Shotokan, or because my style is more technically difficult than another style, so I can't teach a 9-year-old. I mean, those things are irrelevant to the marketplace. So they shouldn't have any bearing on whether or not I make a big hit with these movies coming out this next couple of months, right?
Yeah, in the 90s, our all-time record months and years was when everybody else in the world was screaming about how bad the economy was, is it just didn't make any difference. So you've got to, you know, choose not to play. Now, if you're located in a small town next to the factory that just went belly up and everybody's shuttering the doors, you know, probably time to load up the U-Haul also. But short of that, you know, almost everybody right now in the industry has opportunity around them, and you know, I keep hearing excuses, but you know, I hear one excuse that I'm in a little town of 30,000 people and there's four other karate schools. How can I make it? Another one is my community has a median income of 39,000. How can I charge more? Another one is I'm in a big city and there's, you know, well, in Denver, Colorado, there's 320 martial arts schools last I checked the listing. You know, but I hear that all the time. Well, there's, you know, so many schools, just one in every corner. How can I do well? You know, so it's big city, small town, style. You know, it's all this stuff, but the reality is it's in your mind. You get out there and you make it happen or you decide to fail. And it's important to get out of your own way and do that. Hey, Toby, why don't we open it up here for a few questions? I mean, we've been ranting on for about 40 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
We do want to remind people that as you're unmuting it, the new package they got in the mail has that big brochure on Extreme Success Academy. And this is going to be an incredible event. As most people know, it's, you know, NAPMA's first time now in 5 years of relaunching their big event. It's very important everybody be there because we have some real surprises and some huge value laying in store in the pipeline. So you really, really don't want to miss that. The other thing, Toby, I think you just sent out in the package there the Inner Circle Peak Performers applications, and we've been having a lot of people ask about that, but you know, if they want to be in coaching or Peak Performers or Inner Circle, they got to get their application in right away, and if they don't really understand it clearly, I think you're scheduling time for Inner Circle and Peak Performers to talk one-on-one with Rob. The your Inner Circle group, we talked a lot about that last call, and they had a bunch of them on the call, but you know, your threshold for that, Toby, is what, around 300,000, 400,000 a year now?
Yeah. It seems to be accelerating. It seems to be creeping up. But, yeah, right now, if you're 300, 350, you're probably close. It would deserve a conversation. Anything under 300, we definitely need to be talking about the peak performer.
Right. And if somebody wants, you know, really feels like they need their hand held a little bit more, you know, that's what on the coaching side, that's what we schedule, you know, one-on-one, one time a month to help, you know, specifically address individual situations. Peak Performers Inner Circle are a very productive format, which is a mastermind format, and then a mastermind call and, of course, the discussion board one day or another to keep everybody on task. But anyway, let's open the lines up here and see if we have some immediate questions from anybody on the call.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe if I could expand on one thing real quick is you mentioned Extreme Success Academy, and you know this for anybody who's not made a decision to come or not yet, the guest list keeps becoming more and more robust. But really, at the show in September, we've got three or four secrets we're going to be revealing that the industry hasn't caught on to yet, or at least not in mass. And we have a couple of leading experts in fields outside of the martial arts industry that are going to be there to help you and facilitate. And we're talking about ways that you can do some very high-level business activity and create wealth in your martial arts school, including but not exclusive of potentially owning the commercial property that you teach in right now, or buying a shopping center and operating your school out of it. And a couple of these, actually one of our resources who are going to be helping our members at the Extreme Success Academy, is able to make these deals happen in most cases for less than you're paying for rent right now. So if there isn't any other reason for you to want to be at Extreme Success Academy, the ability to be able to learn how to put together a commercial real estate purchase like this with this sort of, you know, very low down payment, very low risk, high leverage activity. If there isn't another reason in the world, then this is the one that you need to be there for. Because
well,
I mean, this is something.
Literally, we're going to have the owner of one of the most aggressive and entrepreneurial banks in the country, who does SBA guaranteed financing and deals with niches just like ours, which are owner operators, small shopping centers, and single owner operator buildings. who in many cases can facilitate getting the financing done on the spot or immediately thereafter. Another gentleman who's a ninth degree black belt martial artist, old friend of mine, but he's now one of the leading experts in commercial real estate, who's going to show people how to put together the financing and maybe create $1 million or so in instant equity on the deal. So on the real estate side, we're going to have the guy who can get the financing done, the guy that can show you how to put the investor pool together, and the guy that can show you how to structure the deal. On the operations side, of course, we're going to have some of the top people in the industry that are in, I think not least of which is coaching members and Inner Circle, who are going to be really sharing behind the scenes of what's going on day to day right now, as well as a few of the old timers like myself and Jeff Smith, and you can go through the list, and including my instructor, Grandmaster Jun Ri. Let's go to some questions, Toby, so we don't monopolize our time today on that.
Absolutely. The line's now open, so if you're currently muted, you can star six yourself to unmute yourself, and if you've got a question, go ahead and yell it out there.
Master Oliver?
Yes.
All right. This is Robert Blum. I'm a People Formers member from New York. I have been in the process of putting together something as a proposal for the local movie theater for Kung Fu Panda. We dropped it off to the general manager. I had to sit down with her and met with her. She's very excited about it, but she needs to clear it with her district manager, and he's dragging his feet. In your experience, is there anything that we can do to kind of push him along a little bit?
Well, yeah, and is rule number one is anytime you're talking to, frankly, anybody, but especially these theaters, is you always got to remember it's the, what is the old Zig Ziglar line, what's in it for me, WIIFM, is when you're talking to them, see, there's one thing to say, I'd really like to be in your theater and be in front of all these people coming into Kung Fu Panda, and I'm the little karate guy down the street. It's something completely different to be sitting down and saying, we have several hundred families. We want to bring them all in and support the movie. We also want to create an opportunity, and we've got all kinds of great materials already that we're going to use the opportunity for each of them to network with 10 or 20 of their friends and bring them all in. And we want to get them in for a Friday or Saturday, either when the movie debuts or for a word-of-mouth screening ahead of time, so we can help make sure that this has an all-time record opening and that they all come to your theater. But the other thing we'd like to do is we'd like to provide you $150,000 worth of free passes for patrons of your theater. Because what we'd like to do is give them passes that are worth, and you can pick a number, but let's say it's $100. We'd like to give them passes that are worth $100, where when they come in and buy a ticket for $10, they get a pass for martial arts lessons that's worth $100, and it's going to include a uniform. Now, see, what blows their mind is when you're willing to come in and, the free drawing thing is great. I mean, you can do a year drawing. You can put the, put the dollar value on it. But when you come to the table giving them a ton of free stuff, they get really excited about it. Now, another thing that I had big success with this stuff one time is also then joint venturing their advertising buys. Now, for some of you, this works. For others, it doesn't work. Depends on the size of market. But if you're in a relatively small market and you can joint venture an ad buy with a community theater, or if you're a big operator with a lot of locations and can do it across the city, which was our situation, is now you can also go in and say, when you buy your ad listing space, what I want to do is I want to double the space, and I want to create an ad that's going to drive them to Kung Fu Panda, and you can do some of this with the ad agency with Kung Fu Panda as well. They love stuff like that. So it's all about what's in it for them. Now, the other thing, basic sales principle, is you never want somebody else to be trying to make the sale for you. So if there's somebody you've got to be talking to who's the decision maker, you want to make sure that you're in front of the decision maker, not somebody else. So if there's a district manager, and I've done this many times over the years, where the roadblock was some guy at district office who had some, we had one here, United Artists, the guy just didn't like martial arts. And finally it was I just had to take him out to lunch, show him all the stuff we were doing, show him it was all about character development for kids, found out he had an 8-year-old, you know, showed him what the value would be for his 8-year-old, and finally we got over that hurdle. But you've got to go to the decision maker yourself, not let somebody else run interference, because usually they'll muck it up.
Yeah, I've got everybody muted right now because of the back noise, but you know, that's what I was going to add too. Yeah, I'll unmute that. But that's what I was going to add too is never talk to somebody who can't give you a yes.
Yeah.
If you're talking
always
to somebody who can only give you a no, yeah. And in the case of having an area guy and then a local guy, the local guy in many cases can only say no. You know,
yeah.
If he says yes and still has to clear it with somebody, that ain't a yes yet, you know.
Yeah, I was saying, how do I get past the gatekeeper to get to that direct marketing?
You know, figuring out who the right decision maker is. And you know, a lot of times you can get around that with, frankly, a direct mail lead or something like that. So let's say you are in this situation that Robert was describing, where you have the regional developer or the regional, director or whatever. And so, one of the things I might do is take a bunch of stuff that, you know, NAMA's put together and a bunch of stuff that you have about your school and what the program is and a nice little professional cover letter and FedEx it to them. Now, it seems stupid to FedEx it to them since they're, you know, a couple blocks away. But what happens is the FedEx guy walks in with a thing addressed to that guy, it probably gets to him, or if you just stick in the mail, it, you know, goes back to the gatekeeper. And so you can do something like that with your cell phone number and say, I'd like to take you out to lunch and, you know, explain how we can help your theater and how we can help make this, a big boon for you and how we can work cooperatively to create a win-win. And it's just being creative on figuring out how to get around them and get their attention and being willing to spend a little bit of time and effort and money to get to that point.
Yeah, the FedEx package is always a good grabber because even from a UPS package, it's very differentiated. It's always like the top of the pile. But let me unmute again and see if we can get back. Howard, is that helpful?
Okay. Well, let's get some other questions here. Oh, okay, good. Toby, let's go through a quick, like, 2-minute checklist on things that everyone really should be doing to make sure they have some positive headway on this deal. And to leapfrog off of what those two questions were, and I'll assume that maybe on Kung Fu Panda and Red Belt and Kingdom, maybe they're representative, is, you know, first of all, many martial artists have trouble getting into what I'll call an entrepreneurial mindset. And I think of it this way, you know, if you're sparring, and I always hate it when people use, you know, martial arts metaphors on me because usually they don't, like, know what they're talking about. But, you know, but if you're sparring and you try a back fist a certain way and it doesn't work, you don't decide a back fist doesn't work. You figure out, you know, you use Joe Lewis's term, you need a different angular attack. You know, you maybe need a fake. Maybe you need to, you know, use independent motion. Maybe you need a shoulder fake, a hip fake. Maybe you need to lead with it differently. Maybe you need to lead with a kick and then do the back fist. You know, I mean, there's 38 different iterations of the way you might change the thing to get the technique to work. But then you take that same martial artist who knows that and perhaps knows it not only intellectually but intuitively in application, and now you put them in walking into a movie theater or walking into a school or walking into a high school or walking into a corporation. And they get a no. Well, you know, they don't realize that now it needs a hip fake. Now it needs independent motion. Now it needs, you know, some other angle. And suddenly they just think, well, I can't get this done because that person said no. And so, you know, entrepreneurial principle number one is, you know, there's 20 different ways to attack any different thing. And when you're going at it, you've just got to keep figuring out what the angle is that's going to get you through both to the decision maker and get them excited about making a decision that's positive and productive for you. And you've got to realize that it's all about what's going on in their head. It's not about what's going on in your head. So, and again, that it's not about what's good for your business. It's what's good for their business. Or if they're an employee of the business, what's good for, you know, their job, what's good for their promotion prospects, what's good for keeping them from getting in trouble. I mean, it's looking at it from their angle. So, you know, if I want to hit you with a back fist, I know it's not about how I feel about a back fist. It's about how you're going to respond and react, and how I can get you to, you know, to fall for the fake and then, you know, hit you in the nose. And so you've got to be using that same strategy that pretty much everybody we're working with has developed in one area and use it for your business environment. And so the first thing with all this stuff is, you know, don't take a quick no. Most sales, you know, you have to get 7 no's before you get a yes. Some of them you get 11 or 12 no's before you get a yes. And always go at it looking at it from their eyes and their worldview and what's in it for them rather than, you know, why you want to do it. Toby, how would you expand on that?
Well, you know, it reminds me of a session that we, that you and I and the rest of the staff actually at Atma did with Dan Kennedy just a while back. And one of the things that he sort of kept circling back around to was that success principles are success principles regardless of the market, regardless of the business, regardless of the niche, regardless of the industry, regardless of all these external factors. And the only reason that like makes any sense compared to what you were just talking about is if we took the same principles that we apply that are successful as martial artists, which is, you know, how many times would you fail for your black belt testing before you give up, right? And everybody on the call would fail 8 billion times and never give up, right?
Yeah.
Well, those same people then sort of bump into the gatekeeper, or they bump into that challenge in the marketing or in the sales of their services or whatever it may be. They find that first obstacle, and we sort of regress back to being a white belt student and think that we should give up, right? Well, and Howard, by the way, this is not an indication of what you've done. I know some of the activities that you've tried to get around the gatekeeper, and you're very proactive about that. But we see that trend happening time and time and time again. And really, the principles of success that happen inside your martial arts classroom are exactly the same principles that you should be applying to your martial arts business. It's the same thing because we're only dealing with human psychology. We're not dealing with anything else. And the guy who makes the decisions, the other example was they were talking about selling to corporations, like businesses that market to other businesses have to market differently than businesses that market to consumers, which is completely false.
Yeah.
You know, the guy, Lee Iacocca, as the president of Chrysler, bought golf clubs, bought cars, bought dinner, right? I mean, he bought things that people buy because corporations don't do anything. People do things. So,
he bought suppliers for you know, dashboard fixtures in the same process that he bought things for himself personally.
Yeah, exactly. A sale is a sale is a sale, and really, what you're doing when you're walking into a movie theater, you're walking into a daycare center or a church or a youth group or whatever it may be, is you're selling them on the concept of creating a relationship with you. And if you walk into the sale like you indicated, if you walk into every sale, and this is in the martial arts school and it's external to the martial arts school, every sale you walk into is all about what you can do for them, not what they can do for you. And as long as you can do that, I mean, that's the psychology that you have to be able to make those things work.
Right. Absolutely. Do you want to try to open it up and see if we can get one or two more questions there, Toby, before we have to run?
Absolutely, I can do that. So if you're on right now, go ahead and hit *6 on your phone to mute yourself out. Open this up.
Hi, this is Jonathan. This is Jonathan Metcalf, calling from Connecticut.
Hey, Jonathan, welcome.
I'm going to do a sales presentation to launch my new leadership program.
Yeah.
And how much of the lessons we've learned about ad copy can be used in a sales presentation? Is it the same thing? Is it different?
That's essentially the same thing. I mean, The direction is this, is that if you're good at selling something face-to-face, all that putting in writing is translating what you would say to the person.
Let's try that again. That was getting really bad there, but I just need that on.
I got the question. So let's reiterate for everybody is you know, Jonathan, you're an Inner Circle member, and we've been talking about like how to write ad copy and how to do copywriting and headlines and body copy and all that kind of stuff. And see what I and the question was is you're getting ready to present your new leadership program, and is the principle of actually one-on-one sale different than or the same as writing ad copy? And I think actually, to make it real clear for everybody, is the principle really actually goes the opposite way, which is all that ad copy is the same way you would sell to somebody in person that's then translated in writing. It's John Kennedy, who's long since dead, from the 30s, I think, but his description was all that advertising is salesmanship in print. And what a lot of people forget is they try to, like, sit down and think they have to be a novelist to, like, write up a description for what they're selling or what their program is or how it all works. But if you – and in most operators who've had some success, and, Jonathan, you've had a lot of success or you wouldn't be in Inner Circle, and I know you're, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 a year, or actually more like $600,000 or $700,000 this year, is – if you're good at presenting in person, the starting point is kind of to record that, transcribe it, and that becomes the written presentation. And so if you're now presenting to a group, a sale to a group is really no different than a sale to an individual. The only thing that changes much is being able to close the group as opposed to close an individual. So you've got to be, you know, good at how do I get them to move, how do I get them to take action, because you can't leave it open-ended. So if I was talking to a person one-on-one and didn't ask them to fill out the agreement, sign it, and give me a check, I'd have problems. But if I'm talking to a group, a lot of times we, like, you know, freeze up and don't ask for that that same close. So you've just got to, when you go from one-on-one to a group, you've got to, you know, ask for the close. When you go from one-on-one to a group to in writing, you've got to figure out the way that you're going to get their attention, because the problem with the written form is not so much that you can't get it to be persuasive, is you can't get them to pay attention. So you've got to figure out how to, you know, that's what Toby was talking about, grabbers, like FedEx packages and stuff. You got to figure out the way to first, like, get their attention. When we've kicked off a lot of these things, like a new leadership program, a lot of times, well, you know, like I have a letter that, you know, we did those fake $1 million bills, a letter that references why that is, put it in, I think at one time I did the fake FedEx envelopes, another time we did it in Priority Mail envelopes, another time we actually did it in FedEx envelopes. I'm not sure it made any difference. So probably, you know, the decision between those three is the one that was, you know, cheaper. The problem with FedEx to residents is, you know, they're not there, so it becomes a pain they have to get delivered. But the essence of the letter, which is directly applicable to what you're saying, is, you know, as you can see, I've attached a fake $1 million bill to the thing. Why have I done that? Well, you know, let me tell you a story. For years now, at all of Mile High Karate Black Belt retreats, we've always gotten everybody together, and sometimes it's several hundred people, and ask them one question. And the question went like this: if I could put you in a time machine, and you guys suspend disbelief because I know you don't think it's possible, but if I could put you in a time machine, take you back to the point at which you made a decision to start martial arts instruction with us, and I could take you back to that point and give you back all the money you spent, not only with us, but, you know, events and outfits and all that stuff, and I could give you back all the time and take you back to that point, would you do it? Would you take the deal? Of course, room full of black belts, everybody always says no. So the next question is what if I gave you back everything you ever spent, all the time you ever spent, all the aggravation you ever had, all the effort you ever expended, and gave you another $100,000? Well, how about $500,000? How about $1 million? Well, in 20 years of asking that question, I've never had anybody who would take you up on that offer. In fact, I've had many who said, no, it's worth many times that. Now, the only question, see, now, parenthetically, if that's true, if all of your black belts truly feel that way, your only sales process problem is in getting a prospect to, you know, use the NLP terms, to future pace themselves, put them mentally into the future and have them look backward, as opposed to trying to talk them into, you know, why all the benefits and all the justifications and all the rationale. Does that make sense? So the letter was fake $1 million bill, that explanation, and then justification, you know, or support materials, in other words, testimonials and stuff like that, put into a fake FedEx envelope, mailed to them. Now, does that make the sale? No. And see, the best direct mail people in the world get maybe 1% or 0.5%, maybe 4 or 5% max. And if we're doing upgrades, we're shooting for, you know, I'm shooting for 100%, but you know, if we get less than 75%, I'm not happy. But it does grease the skids. Now, when you translate that to a verbal presentation, whether it's one-on-one or to a group, it's all the same thing. You've got to mentally move them forward into the future and have them look back at, as a parent, how proud I am of my child and how excited I am and how much they've achieved. If it's an adult, how excited I am, how enthusiastic. And you really need to mentally and physically get them into that moment, so that now the price objections go away and the time, effort, and money objections go away, and they're now enthusiastic about doing that. Toby, why don't you open that up again?
Yeah, absolutely. Hang on one second. You know, by the way, John, another side note is one of the resources that Peak Performers Inner Circle members will have in about 30 days is access to John E. Kennedy's book called Reason Why Advertising, which is exactly what you're asking is all sales copy, for all intents and purposes, should be in a conversational tone, just like you would be talking to that person in real time anyway. So that's access to that very soon.
Which is why you don't let an English teacher proofread anything you do.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it tends to screw things up. Yeah, the more of a manual it looks, the worse. You know.
Yeah. Hey, John, did Dan answer the question?
You know, it reframed the question. So,
okay.
I think it did better than answer the question.
Okay. As long as it's not worse than answering the question.
So let me just run, if I have a minute.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my structure was about 10 minutes of talking, a 15-minute preview of what a leadership class would look like, and a 5-minute invitation to come to there's a pre-launch event, to an event next week where they'll get the details and pricing on how to register and give them an application. And
talking about doing that in a class setting? Is that what you're talking about?
So, yeah, it's an invitation-only kind of event as a pre-launch. So I put out I put out 97 invitations to, you know, a group of students I thought were likely to register. And I've had a pre-launch event and a launch event, and the pre-launch event was, in my mind, is a sort of sample class and sales pitch followed by an invitation to come to the launch event, and the launch event is basically a registration event.
Right. Let me add two things to what you just said, which is be careful about it being, see how I say this right. A lot of times the glitz and the glamour of what it is I want to accomplish is much more important than the process I'm going to go through. Okay? I went to Georgetown University, and I went through an interview process and filled out applications and came on campus, one thing or another, right? But if in the process what they had done is had me actually sit into the econometrics class and actually do a fake process of going through the midterm, well, see, that was a whole different experience than walking on the campus and seeing the beautiful buildings. They were built in 1700 and something or other, and seeing the pictures of how the campus used to sit on the hill, in Washington by itself, and hearing the evolution with the Jesuits. I mean, it was a whole different presentation, right? Now, you know, when you're at the end of the process and you've got the diploma, you're just as proud of it. But see, what I'm buying is I'm not buying the specifics of what I'm going to do. I'm buying the outcome, right? So it's very difficult to get a child enthused about the leadership training you're doing. It's easy to get them excited about, like, you know, a bunch of XMA type of stuff or something like that, right? It's very easy to get a parent excited about the outcome for the child, but it's very difficult to get them to visualize the day-to-day activity you're going to do with the child in order to get them to get to the outcome. You've got to, you know, get them to mentally imagine what the look and feel of it is. And you saw that infomercial we have for the upgrade. I mean, that's, and you can't go spend $100,000, I know, but that's the reason for something like that, is it mentally gets them into that outcome and works them backwards, if that makes sense. So you do have to be careful about the structure, and it has to be more about the sizzle than the exact process. I mean, I don't want that to sound wrong, but it's not about the 10 things they're going to do and the 10 books they're going to read and the 10 lessons they're going to learn. It's about the outcome. So you've got to make sure that the classroom, and you don't have the ability to get 20 people who are now gone through the process up there talking about how great it was. So you've got to create a little theater that gets them to sort of suspend disbelief and move themselves in the future and see it, and be careful about not having it really be too much about what the thing really is. Does that make sense?
That doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
So, you know, I would just give you that caution, is when you get them there, the kids get to do a couple of really exciting activities, and the parents, you know, you literally, you know, do the NLP thing. I mean, everybody come up, you know, sit down, you know, close your eyes, imagine into the future, and your son is 8. Imagine when he's 12, and here's what he's accomplished. And now he's a junior in high school, and he's running for class president, and he's a, you know, an honor student. And by the way, you know, in our case, you know, we have this student who graduated second in his class at West Point, and here's what he's doing now, and here's how the outcome is, and here's why the program affected that. So, how to be that, the emotional state you get them in. And hopefully that helps. You know, I would, Toby, I'll turn it over to you to give them a little bit of an expanded preview of the event in the fall. But, you know, in the meantime, I would really suggest to everyone, a couple days before any of these calls, email or fax any questions you'd like answered. And we can really kind of start a lot of these calls at the top with those things. And Toby, probably as soon as summer is over, we'll go to you know, operator facilitated, so we don't have the docking, you know, barking dogs and wind noise in the background. The other thing is I almost forgot, is we didn't have a call scheduled for July, but I managed to talk Dan Kennedy into doing one for us. So we are going to have, I think it's July 15th.
Yes, that's right.
July 15th, we're going to have a special bonus maximum impact call with Dan Kennedy, and we're going to be talking to him about a lot of stuff. Especially I want to talk to him about, you know, marketing in a market like this for martial arts schools. And he has his new book coming out, which Toby, you and I have read. It's really good. We got the galley copies. But no BS, what is it? No BS Ruthless Management or something like that.
People, Profits, and exactly.
Yeah, which, by the way, is phenomenal. I don't think it's out in the bookstores yet, but it's coming out shortly. So it's 95% applicable to people management within a martial arts school. So if you have staff, one or more, it's definitely a book you should read. If you don't have staff, it's, you know, probably not relevant for you right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, really, I think one of the biggest pieces of value that he brings to the table, you know, on the 15th is any school owner who's in growth mode, regardless of if it's from one school to two schools, from one school to expand your student base, or to go from part-time to full-time, doesn't matter what it is, you need help. And you're going to need human resources.
Toby,
you're going to need people to help you with that stuff. What's that, Ben?
I've got to run, so I'll let you finish up here.
Okay, sure, absolutely. But yeah, that I think is the big value that Dan brings to the table in the special teleconference, because if I'm $350,000 a year and I want to go to $500,000, or if I'm 100,000 a year and I want to go to 2, I'm going to need help. I'm going to need support. And Dan's company is, you know, on a meteoric rise right now in gross revenue, gross profit, and number of clients. He has almost 20,000 clients in North America now, in the world now, and has now a tremendous staff, but also brings to the table a tremendous insight into staff management, human resource management, and that sort of topic, where if I'm a school owner looking to expand a multiple location, or if I'm expanding my current location, I need help. I'm going to need humans to do things for me. And this is one of the areas that we see at NAPMA, martial arts schools fall very hard, very fast, from staff legal issues all the way up to just motivating and becoming an inspiring staff manager. Unfortunately, it seems to be the same sort of weird dichotomy that martial arts school owners trend towards when they operate their business differently than their training was. They tend to forget that they're staff inspirers, not necessarily just staff managers. And they sort of treat them like, they're just robots there to do the physical, you know, day-to-day activities that they don't want to do, rather than inspiring them to become something better and something more. And that's something that, you know, I think Dan is a master of. And the title of the book is, you know, No BS, Ruthless Management of People, Profits, and Power. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're, not a compassionate manager, but it does have to do with holding people accountable for results, not just activity, which is another thing we see school owners fall into the trap of very, very, very often. Is it sort of goes like this, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but I think this is valuable. It sort of goes like this. Well, I'm a school owner. I don't want to teach the noon class anymore, so I'm going to hire somebody to be able to teach that class for me. And then that person sort of becomes like a robot, and their outcome is just to go in and teach that class. Well, really, that's not an outcome. That's an activity. The outcome is, well, that class hour is worth X number of dollars to the school. How do I contribute X number of dollars to the school for that hour that I'm there? Am I productive or counterproductive to the growth of the school? You know, that sort of stuff. So it's really important to frame your staff members the right way from day one, or reframe them right now if they're not framed this way, that you're not paying them for the hour that they show up. You're paying them for the results that they get. And in our model, we pay staff members in direct proportion to the gross revenue of the school. So if I'm a chief instructor in a school, my salary is 10% of the gross revenue, or $2,500, whichever's more. And by the way, if you get $2,500, you know, 3 months in a row, it's time to go look for a new job, because, you know, none of us are happy. You're not generating the results that you should be getting, and you're not growing the school the way we need it to be grown. So if that makes sense. So our structure of how we create and maintain a relationship with a staff member doesn't have to do with them trading hours for dollars. It has to do with them having a certain amount of opportunity to create X results for the school, whether it's financial results, new students, new leads, whatever it may be. So I think that's something that Dan brings to the table for his special conference, and we're all really excited about that. And so we look forward to seeing you guys on that call. And then the last thing we wanted to cover was, of course, Exchange Success Academy. If you've not registered for the show yet, please do so right away. Peak Performer members and Inner Circle members, you all have prepaid tickets. So if you've not reserved your seat, please do that right away. If you're Inner Circle or Peak Performer member, just go to go to ExtremeSuccessAcademy.com. You can either download the registration form or you can register online. And Peak Performer Inner Circle members, I'd love to know exactly. I'd love for you guys to register this week. So make sure I know. We're starting to fill seats very, very, very quickly, and the facility that we're in is, we're deciding whether we're going to format the facility a certain way. So I need to have a pretty accurate headcount of people home inner circles as soon as humanly possible. And then that's an impact members and basic members. I guess they aren't on the call. But same thing, register as soon as humanly possible. There's some early bird discounts that are still in play right now, but they go away in just a few weeks. So we want you to take advantage of that. And again, as seats are filling quickly, we're making decisions about how we're going to structure the physical format of the location. So we'd love to know that as soon as humanly possible. But besides that, Clearwater Beach in September is a beautiful place to visit, and you know, it's white sand beaches, and we're right on the beach. It's going to be a beautiful beautiful location, and you know, I'd probably plan an extra couple of days at the end, and maybe you can run over to Disney or to Busch Gardens for a day with the family. It'd be pretty productive. But anyway, we're really excited about all that, and we really think that we're contributing something to the martial arts industry this year with this show that's never been done before. And, you know, not only are we going to have speakers that will be able to give you information, but we're actually creating relationships with these people to give you access to their resources. So not only can you, you know, learn the five steps you have to take to be able to make a commercial deal work, but you can actually tap into their resource network and have, you know, professionals and experts in that area walk you through the process by the hand. So I think that a huge resource for the industry and something that's never happened before, and something we're really excited about. So we look forward to seeing all of you guys there. If you have any questions for the next call, you know, feel free to email them over to us and we'll put them on the list. And if not, you know, get out to the theaters, because there's, you know, never been a more opportune time in history supporting everything that we do in our schools with this type of mass media as now. So exciting times. So thanks so much for being on the call, guys. Speak to you really soon. Bye-bye.